Welcome to Chundersmith. I'm Brian.
And I'm Bobby the Warlock.
And Bobby's an author.
Yep, and Brian is a board-certified behavior analyst. Well, I'm an author and artist. I've tried to be a complete artist.
An artiste, yes.
Yeah.
We are also the faces, although you can't really see the faces, so the voices behind Legend Masters.
Yeah. So Brian, let me tell you about Brian Middleton over here. He hustles. He bustles. He well, I don't know, something that rhymes with scores. Any which way, he goes out and gets the sales, and I'm a little bit more socially anxious, and in a lot of ways, it's true. It's un I didn't even realize that until this year. I'm literally the reason I'm such an eccentric is because I'm so socially anxious. I was so badly socialized as a kid, so I dress like a lunatic because it's well, I am one. I mean, why not?
Or are you a person who's experiencing lunacy?
No, it's well. It's also the problem is okay. So like I did years ago, back in like 2005 and six, I was designing iPod cases, and for years and years, I never owned an iPod. It's like once you see behind the scenes, like nobody wants to see how the sausage is made. It's like once you know how fashion is done, it's like oh gosh, this is a stupid game, and I'm into anthropology as well. So there's no reason to dress in any particular way unless you desire to convey a narrative within a culture.
Okay. Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. Any piece of clothing you wear, and even the way you wear it, will inform the way people behave around you. I ran an experiment a couple of years ago. I've got a beard and long hair, so I can very easily look like a very uncivilized person. I put on an old green parka, walked around town in the middle of winter, and people treated me like garbage. And then later that day, I went back home, put on a nice suit, went back, and the same people treated me very differently. It was like I hadn't even showed up earlier. It's like they didn't know what they were interacting with. And that's when I realized I wasn't even dealing with people. I was dealing with scripts and patterns of behavior that they had subscribed to make life easy. Most of our behavior through the day is our quotidian, just whatever you're going through, it's programmed. Almost everything everyone's doing is just programmed. By the time you're in your 30s, I can't remember what clinical psychologist said is like by the time you're about 35, about 90%, 95% of your day is programmed.
Wait, are you just saying that we're responding to stimuli?
We're responding to stimuli, and if we have a rhythm that doesn't upset the organism and sufficiently reinforces it, I would reckon that, yeah.
Oh,
Oh, you
well.
got a nice job, and it gives you a nice story that you can complain to your friends about, and that gives you a sense of meaning without actually accomplishing anything. Kapow!
Wait, but, like, what counts as stimuli?
Anything, dude. Internal, external, whatever fires a neuron, whatever gets life choochin'.
Ah, life. Life is the key.
Yeah.
It's so Brian here. I'm talking about myself in the third person.
Bob
Brian here,
Dole! Bob Dole! Doesn't Bob
Bob
Dole?
Dole, yes. Brian here is being a little fucky, a little funny, a little silly. Brian here has two other podcasts. One of them is hosted with his lovely wife. The podcasts are O Behave, and Act Natural, and both of those are focused in their own way on radical behaviorism. A radical behaviorism is a branch of science that focuses on stimuli. And there's a lot of misconceptions about behaviorism out there, mostly because people don't know history.
Or they know too little history and
Too
they had
little
the
history.
Dunning-Kruger effect, and they're like, I know something, and that makes me the expert.
Yes, I know so much about this one thing. So so we have Pavlov and his behaviorism that he introduced, the classical behaviorism, and then we have John Watson. And a lot of times when people think behaviorism, they're usually thinking John Watson or B.F. Skinner, or they're thinking of B.F. Skinner as a person and assuming he is John Watson. John Watson was an interesting fellow, I'll say that much. And he was an asshole.
Monstrosity.
Yes, a monstrosity.
He
And
was a, it's interesting that so many scientists are total psychopaths. Like they just have no empathy for other human beings, but that literally primes them to be able to ask questions past the point of disgust that other humans are if they're
I
funny.
don't know if it was, maybe it's an over fascination with a particular question to the detriment of other things I hesitate to assign since I have not met
I've
him
met too many scientists. I've
and
told you.
also I have not the ability to be able to use a psychopathy checklist to be able to determine whether or not So historically speaking, we can say that he was a little bit too curious about his question to the point of detriment towards other people. But John Watson was a part of the methodological behaviorists. Methodological behaviorists believe that behavior is everything from the skin outwards. Behavior is observable. If multiple people can observe it, it counts as behavior. The problem with that is that, well, what about the stuff that's underneath the skin? What about the stuff that you can't observe immediately, or at least only one person can observe? That's kind of an important question there. Yeah. And the reason why B.F. Skinner classed himself as a radical behaviorist was not because he was totally bodacious dude.
Tubular
wild
behavior.
Stallions.
I can't do it.
Anyways, he proposed a radical concept at the time that internal events, aka thoughts, feelings, emotions, memories, all those things are behavior. And at the time, that was incredibly radical, because at the time we didn't have technologies that could detect brain waves, could detect neuroelectric activity, that could easily detect glandular activity, or we could see
primitive electroencephalograms.
Primitive, but
so they could tell there were impulses, there were electrical impulses.
But it was not easily detectable. And correct. Also, the other side of it is that what I'm thinking right now. What am I thinking about right now, Bobby?
A number 7, 3, 8.
Tacos. Damn it! I want tacos. All right. That's a private event. You can't know that I'm thinking about tacos, nor can you know what type of tacos I was thinking of, because I didn't tell you. So the observer of that was one person observed that interaction. Only me. I'm the only one who can say it. So that's a private event, therefore. Now, the challenge there is, how do you interact with private events in relation to behavior? So behaviorism was proposing the radical concept, especially radical behavior, because we're totally radical, dude.
Tubular.
Oh,
every
man.
Time you say radical behavior, I'm going to say tubular.
Well, radical behavior.
Tubular.
There we go. Stimulus and response, folks. Stimulus and response.
I'm practically salivating.
Anyways. But this is amazing.
Hey, do you have any more of this kombucha?
It's not kombucha. That's just a water bottle.
Oh, that's too bad.
I'm sorry. We might have some upstairs if you want to go run away from
it. No.
Okay.
I wanted to. Okay, so.
Finish my idea. So, the idea being that external stimuli, we start with the external stimuli. So, we start outwards and move inwards instead of starting inwards and moving outwards. Now, I want to point something out here. Even though we've been more than a little bit disrespectful of Watson, he actually was a giant in his own way, even though he had some very questionable behaviors. Not gonna say a nay against that. And likewise, I'm not gonna say nay against other pioneers, especially Mr. Freud, Mr. Jung, and the like.
Cocaine is a hell of a drug.
Yeah, it is.
Mr. Freud.
But here's the thing. Those people were scientists of the truest regard. They were trying to understand and ask questions, and they were observing and describing as best what they observed as best they could. So, that being said, from the behaviorist perspective, it was kind of bass backwards. So, the behaviorist perspective was a tradition of saying, let's try to understand from the outside moving inwards, and then the Freudian perspective was kind of trying to understand inwards and moving outwards. And I would argue that outwards moving inwards is much more replicable and solid, but should not be dismissed, because it had a very important contributing characteristic. And I will say this right now, if you know anything about behaviorists and you're rolling your eyes because you're like, behaviorists are fucking assholes.
Behaviorists are monstrosities that hate humans.
Unfortunately, that's our own damn fault, because we weren't paying attention to, drum roll please, our behavior.
Yeah, isn't it strange? I noticed even in your current education program, it seemed like those who are supposed to understand the principles of behaviorism best teach it so poorly as to demonstrate an utter failure to understand. It's like
exceptionalism.
Behaviorists, Right. Behaviorists should be the best teachers in the world. If a behaviorist isn't a millionaire by the time he's 45, he's not a behaviorist.
I'm going to tell you right now that the program that I went through, which I have since been graduated from and very happy to be gone from it, thank you very much, was definitely not a prime example. However, it was a problem. You booped me. What's up?
I just want to give you a thumbs up.
Oh, okay, cool.
Like, yeah.
So, you know, we can be critical. We can go over that all day long. But the long and short of it is that is behavior analysts' fault as a whole and sometimes individually with regards to the way we treated other people and the way we were behaving. Because, hey, guess what? Behavior doesn't occur in a vacuum. And the belief that behavior analysts or behaviorists or whatever you want to call us are assholes or hard to work with or that sort of thing or stuck up.
It's true. The absolute God honest truth.
It's based on truth. I'm sorry to say. But there are people who are trying to address it.
Isn't it kind of the same thing as like when doctors get a God complex? You know, they are literally saving people's lives. Yeah. And they kind of develop, it's like, I'm in charge of life and death. And they, you know, it kind of makes them go crazy.
Well, you know, this funny thing happens also for people who have gone through yoga certification.
Right. Could we say that it's almost like there are professions, or like a profession is a field of focus, right? So it's like, field of focus specific errors that predictably happen. Doctors have a field of focus error that is the God complex. Soldiers have the field of focus error that is they tend to smoke themselves to death.
Yeah. And
artists are trying to look for meaning, and so we struggle with meaning, and we just become a bunch of drug addicted sex addicts that kill themselves. Or we find philosophy, and we become like incredible, right?
Or comedy.
Well, the same thing. A comedian is a philosopher, right? But it's the same thing. It's like field of focus specific errors. It's an interesting concept.
So going back to behaviorism, and please understand that this is not a perfect science because it's a science. So by default, a science requires that we have to be constantly asking questions and striving to improve.
And getting baseline data.
Baseline data, yeah. If you don't got baseline, well, you know, that's just your opinion, man. Go to legendmasters.com, select bearded behavior section. There is literally a shirt with the dude saying, no baseline data. Well, you know, that's just your opinion, man. Just saying. Anyways, but going back to this. So what we're trying to do in this science is understand and describe both. Understand and describe. I'm going to turn these lights off since we don't have cameras rolling. There we go. That's so much nicer. Yeah, that's so much nicer. We're over here in the dark. You know, much like you are.
So this behavior and baseline data and stuff. So you and I have had conversations about consciousness and stuff in the past. And I've been thinking about, like, a lot of big brain people can, you know, come to the idea that maybe consciousness is more primal than matter. And as such, it might be that behavior is more primal than matter.
Yeah.
And I think consciousness is almost like a irreconcilable something about prime numbers.
But is a rock falling behavior?
It might be in the grand scheme of things.
No.
Not in the terminology.
It's a reaction.
Yes, because you're talking about biological organisms, but I might be talking about cosmic time, like freaking from the beginning of the universe. And
but is the lichen that ate through the rock causing the rock to fall?
Yes and yes. It might be that the whole thing is alive is what I'm suggesting. Panpsychism is the concept. I'm not saying I necessarily embrace it. It's just an interesting idea.
I'm just going to argue here for a moment, just for a moment.
It's not useful at all in terms of behaviorism. There's no reason for you
It's not useful at all in terms of behaviorism or physics at the level that we interact with.
Like, yeah.
This is kind of cool that we're philosophizing and all this stuff, but I want verifiable evidence, man.
Yeah.
I'm pretty dense, man. I want some evidence.
Right. So you're going for the numbers, but I'm going for the questions. I'm an artist, man. Like, this is the field of focus specific outlook.
But can you measure your question? Or are you just asking a question like a fart into the wind?
If I'm a good artist, I'm asking the question in such a fashion like a tricorder is a piece of art invented for Star Trek, which is invented. That's art. And then it inspires things such as cell phones. So Art is asking a question that's deeper than actuality. It's asking a question that will lead to outcomes, or that might lead to outcomes that would prosper the future.
Writer's prompt. A life in the day of a rock.
It could be a thing.
I just having some fun.
That could be glorious, though. Like, that might be a really good book. Like, what I'm suggesting is to look outside of your own context and presume other angles of focus.
Did you hear what I said?
I might have misunderstood.
Life in the day of a rock.
That's what I said.
I didn't say day of a life of a rock.
A life in the day of a rock?
Yeah.
Oh, I missed that. Life in the day.
Okay. Nice how you do use your nice relational brain characteristics to be able to make sense of something that was nonsensical.
Oh, man, you totally you spooterized me. That's a spoonerism. Dude, that was incredible. And now that provokes, for me as an artist, is provoking a really deep question. How would I translate that concept? How could I explore that idea? Life in the day of a rock.
Yeah.
You know, what does that suggest? Well, maybe it's just a single day in the amount of life that's interacting with this stone. The stone not experiencing it, but the life interacting, you know?
Okay, so this brings me to my point. So behavior analysts have been exploring and asking questions and discovering and trying to understand. Mm-hmm. And other scientists have been exploring and asking questions and trying to understand. And we're all valid in our exploration and trying to understand. And we're all invalid in our exploration and trying to understand, because we all have our biases. We have two cheeks, people. We have a bifurcated ass. We are biased. Anyways,
you got
joke turn.
Two buttholes.
No, two cheeks.
Two buttholes apiece. Talking
two
a lot of crap.
Cheeks.
Talking a lot of crap right now. Okay.
All right, whatever. Anyways, the point being that one of the things that behavior analysts have discovered through our research and stimulus and those sorts of things is the principal researcher behind this, by the way, is Stephen C. Hayes, who I just got off of an insanely wonderful interview, which is going to be published on Act Natural. I'm hoping to publish it within the next day or so. This episode is being published the day it's recorded, because we don't give a shit. And if you're offended by curse words, well, fuck you. Don't listen to this podcast.
Get bothered.
Get out of here.
Get bothered. Get in trouble.
But the point being that he's a principal researcher in something called relational frame theory,
yeah,
which is an expansion off of B.F. Skinner's theories on verbal operants. Yes, that was a lot of bunch of words. If you don't understand what they mean, I'm sorry. Go get educated.
Verbal operants, is that
operations? Know. So operations. How verbal behavior operates.
Okay, verbal behavior. I like to address it as like all human thought is symbolic thought.
Okay, well, B.S. Skinner proposed some ideas, and many of those ideas were incorrect.
Okay.
And B.F. Skinner is a human. If you ever get a chance to read his books, you'll realize that a lot of times the media misrepresented him as being cold, heartless, and that sort of thing. And that was part of the zeitgeist of the time, because keep in mind that during the time that B.F. Skinner was coming into his own was also during the Cold War.
This is the same time while people were getting, vivisected in Japan.
Yeah, this is the same time.
No, that might have been right, slightly before his day.
That was, well, you know, he was a young man during that time. Hmm. This is the time frame when people were... You know, 1984, people were freaking out about mind control, thought control, those sorts of things. So B.F. Skinner was trying to understand and explore how environment influences behavior, because we're starting outwards, so stimulus, and moving inwards. But, you know, he made some incorrect assertions and ideas, and he even, in his book where he proposes these ideas, says in the most roundabout, obtuse scientific way that maybe possibly this is just a hypothesis of a conjecture, and it's kind of entertaining because he's such a sass. He's such a wonderful.
It also shows a lot of self awareness, because it's like in any profession, it's like if you're good at what you do, hopefully you doubt the crap out of yourself to at least a healthy extent. Like I know that I'm like pompous and arrogant, and I come across as brash and obviously narcissistic. You know, embarrassingly so sometimes. I'm like, guys, it's part of the act. It's, do you understand? This is the performance.
But the point being that
they lack artistry is what I'm getting at.
But the point being,
and artistry, I really think, is like the ability to engage in that self-referentialism, yeah, that Skinner had, engage in that, you know, that mirroring self-awareness of thinking about your thoughts and being able to see yourself as context, as you might say.
Exactly, and so that's in B.F. Skinner's book titled About Behaviorism. In chapter 2, he actually has the most beautiful quote about the universe beneath the skin, which if anybody ever doubts that he believed that thoughts, feelings, emotions, memories are, he thought that they are not behaviors. This disproves them perfectly. But okay, so my point being that Dr. Hayes asked the right question. He asked about relations and how different things interconnect with each other. Because there's a phenomenon that's observed in verbal behavior. It's still taught and talked about. It's where if you teach a child that A equals B and B equals C, that child, I believe at the age of 5 or 6, or maybe even sooner, I can't remember the exact age because I may have been enjoying a beverage. But at any point, that child can draw the connection that C equals A.
About what age is that typically?
I can't remember off the top of my head. It might be younger than that. It might be 2 or 3. But it's really fascinating because you can also, if you teach A equals B equals C, you can also get C equals A equals B.
You know, I've seen some studies on this, and we haven't seen the other primates do this.
Uh-huh.
16 species of whale can, but most of the primates can't.
Yeah. But here's the thing. So Dr. Hayes asked the question, what's going on there? Because the way it was being described before was in terms of external stimuli. Like, well, you know, the conversation that Bobby and I are having is we're stimulating each other. So it's like,
I'm stimulating.
Oh, that's really funny. Oh, oh, really funny. Sex joke.
Oh, I'm 5.
All right. So,
I'm this many.
If you've ever seen a Alexa and an Apple Home and a Google Home
talking,
where you start one and you get them all responding to each other, and they're all responding to each other and they're starting a little conversation. Okay, that's basically what Skinner was suggesting, is that that's what's happening when we talk and communicate. But Dr. Hayes was like, I don't know. And that's where, for oversimplification purposes, we go into the birth of relational frame theory, which I'm going to oversimplify it, but basically we create relational connections, and that's what makes us unique.
And then you evaluate which relation is more important to you, and that determines what appears to be chaos in your decision-making process?
Yeah. But it goes a step further, because when we make relationships, we create stories.
Yeah. And then we get stuck in those stories.
Yeah. The stories, the relationships are actually both the source of our problem-solving ingenuity and the source of our suffering.
Mm-hmm. I'm working through a whole lot of figuring out, like, if this person were not somebody that I identify symbolically as, oh, this is my friend, this is my family member, whatever. This person is XYZ. And they would never do such and such. They wouldn't hurt me. So what's happening now isn't pain, right? That sort of forms the denial.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you, but I was asked a really great question. It's like, if a stranger did this, how do you estimate them? It's like, oh, I would think of them as an enemy. If a stranger did this, I would beat the crap out of them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, then that's not my friend. That's an enemy. Okay. Rearranging thoughts based on observation instead of getting stuck even in my own symbolic thinking.
Yeah.
It's a very important question to ask. So I think that's sort of why I'm so interested in reframing the question. Is there another perspective from which we can address the concept? No matter how ludicrous, because ludicrous concepts lead to, occasionally, great discoveries.
And pretty decent rap.
Well played. Yeah, I'm obviously a flat earther, aren't I? I'd hang my... Well, no, I'll go hang myself from a tree at the edge of the world if I can find it. Then I shall commit suicide.
Yes. I will die when I find the edge of the world.
I will kill myself when I find the edge of the world.
Well,
until then, I'm gonna live. No, yeah, this is on record. I will never kill myself. If I die, I was murdered.
And if it was by falling on bullets, it was a certain politician whose name I will not say because, well,
let's not make this political.
I have no proof. I have absolutely no proof. Yeah. I've got no proof.
Please don't let go. Oh,
God. Okay. Okay. Anyways. Okay. So look, like, here we go. Well, we're doing a story. That's a story. We're doing stories. Mm-hmm. So what was it we were coming here to talk about again?
Oh, we're talking about like sort of the fundamental nature of consciousness as it expresses itself oddly through symbolic thought in humans, while the rest of the animals seem to manage to get along just fine.
Well, maybe, because what if all those different whales have this similar type of thought?
Well, nobody wants to think of a naked, singing, fish-eating philosopher in the sea.
Yeah, well, you know, apparently we got them because humans commit suicide, and so do whales and dolphins.
Yeah, there was a case where this trainer and her dolphin were banging, and when they got found out, the dolphin drowned itself, and she was fired.
Okay, just to be clear here, what Bobby just said, so you understand that, is a human female and a male dolphin, prehensile penis and all, were making the sexy times.
They were making love. They had a relationship. You crass, crass, judgmental Pharisees.
I am so crass. That's right.
Honestly, I find it disgusting. Dolphins smell horrific. I don't know how she overcame the stench.
Yeah, some people...
What a freak. You know, she has that foreign fetish. I mean, it's like, that's an extreme foreign fetish, gal.
I don't know. Maybe...
But
maybe...
dolphins are people.
Maybe she pairs the smell of the ocean and of dolphins with joy.
Oh, sure, maybe, yeah, I guess it's about...
Like, some people like hanging around pigs.
I mean, if she's having that good of a time, she's probably stimulus-pairing pretty hard.
I'm pretty sure that whatever happened prior to that was the thing that initially paired the positive stimuli. But the point being that the dolphin, when it was separated from the human, killed itself.
Yeah, and humans consciously.
Humans kill themselves as young as the age of 6.
Yeah, it's happening right now. I was listening to, this was a while ago, and that makes it even more horrifying. Professor Jonathan Haidt was mentioning girls as young as 8 are slashing their wrists now.
Yeah.
The stimulus pairing of social media really seems a frightening thing.
Well,
because it's sort of a supernatural... hijacks the things he evolved for gossip.
Well, let's go into that there for a second because, okay, so pain is inevitable.
Suffering is
optional.
Optional, yeah.
Yeah. So that's one of the foundational concepts of relational frame theory / acceptance and commitment therapy or training. The T could stand for either. Interestingly, we've been discovering through quite a bit of research, we're now at thousands of studies. That we're trying to understand and apply to a variety of topics, that when one accepts pain, and by accepting, we mean literally accepting, like no qualifications, that suffering disappears. And when one looks at their story in context, instead of looking at their story as their content, that's a big part of that disengaging from that suffering. So I'll give you an example. Mm-hmm. What's a good example?
Well, I was thinking about an example of it.
Okay.
Which was sort of not just an example, but an extrapolation of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like I know this kid who is way into a particular...
fandom?
A cartoon brand. I don't want to say anything because then that might be...
Let's just say fandom.
Into a certain fandom, deep into a fandom to the degree that this person cannot engage in any other way with people. They've fixated on this concept. And I was thinking, like, isn't it freedom to say, this is sort of where I think you and I cross over quite a bit. I think I would use the word artistry when you can step outside of the story that you've lived in entirely. If you have the capacity to fully step out of yourself, look at you and say, wow, that's a container full of stories. And then choose which story to tell, or even change all the stories to discard the stories and tell a new story. I think it's like when you become that author, you've become like, that's true mastery of art. That's true artistry. That's true masterpiece.
The name, well, I'm going to give this individual a fictional name so we can talk about him for a minute. to protect the innocent slash guilty. We shall call this individual Heathen.
Well said.
Okay, so this individual by the name of Heathen, he had a lot of suffering in his life, or a lot of pain, I should say.
Yeah.